This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us on Good Friday, and happy holiday to you. Pleased you're listening to WRKF, and if you'd like to participate today, the number is 877-217-5757. Please send emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. First Financial Tax and Accounting Services provides signature support for our program. And we'll spend a good portion of the hour with two seasoned professors in different parts of the state, Jeff Sado in North Louisiana, LSU Shreveport, political science professor there for more than 30 years, and Dane Sherman, who is at Southeastern Louisiana University, and both gentlemen are speaking on behalf of themselves, not their universities, but Dane, as we know, is a potent force on the left side of the political spectrum, and in Louisiana, he's often outgunned by his conservative brothers like Dr. Sado, but they are here to talk about different matters that are before us, and if you'd like to opine, we would like to hear from you as well. Today, in the newspaper of record, The Advocate, front-page story, and we'll get to a few of those, but above the fold, Orgeron called to testify at hearing, legislative panel probing reports of sexual misconduct at LSU. And let's begin with a man who works for Louisiana State University on a different campus, Jeff Sado. Are the reverberations from Baton Rouge reaching Shreveport, Jeff?
Yeah, a little bit. Of course, LSU football is of prime importance to everybody around the state. So, I think that's probably, that particular aspect's probably gotten more attention than the previous previous news about that, including the excommunication of Les Miles and F. King Alexander from their respective schools.
Well, King Alexander was also your boss, and of course, the LSU football coach, whoever he happens to be, is generally the most important person in the state to a lot of people and the highest paid public official. Do we have too much focus on this, or is it warranted?
I think it's warranted. I mean, I'm not sure, too much is the right word. I mean, there does need to be focus. I don't know if there needs to be obsession about it, but at the same time, there's an issue there. I think it's one that does need to be investigated, and that the system doesn't seem to be that eager to do it, but certainly it seems a number of legislators are.
All right. Well, I'm already getting some emails on this, and we'll get Dane Sherman's take as well. But Brianna asked me to ask you, and this was a story from a few weeks ago in The Advocate, about Governor Jindal apparently knew about Les Miles' transgressions and did not respond, at least in any punitive way, toward a coach he liked. Does this show the mojo of the LSU football coach that a governor of Louisiana, who's not inclined to embrace sexual harassment of any kind, bent over backwards to be fair and perhaps overly fair to the football coach?
I don't know how much Jindal knew. I'm not sure that even all the supervisors knew anything about that. But, at the same time, LSU football and athletics have often been used as a political football around the state. Just witness at the beginning of Governor Edwards' first term, he talked about slashing that as a result of budget constraints. So it does become part of the political discussion.
877-217-5757, your Talk Louisiana number. And now we hear from Professor Sherman in Hammond at Southeastern Louisiana University, who is a man on his way to his degrees, spent a lot of quality time at LSU, and you, Dane, know fully well the power that LSU football in particular has. And what about this sordid situation we have during the Miles era, and now it's extending, at least allegations are extending, to the Coach O era?
It's just general corruption, Louisiana corruption, Jim. It's nothing we've not seen before, all the way back to Huey Long marching with the band. And I think that we do need to ask some of these questions, like, what did Jindal know? When did he know it? And the problem is, you've got on one hand, you've got abuse, you've got that should never happen. You've got people paid out, like Les Miles, for his contract when he should have gotten a fat zero. And then we see that it's still going on. And because it's still going on, it's still a systemic problem. And I think it really starts at the board, and we need a board that reflects the state of Louisiana, not just geographically, but as far as gender is concerned and ethnicity. And we had to have some board members that actually know something about higher education, and that has never been a qualification.
Well, during the Jindal years, the entire board, and at that time, I think 18 members, 17 were white men and one was a black female. And now Governor Edwards has appointed a third woman to the board, still a distinct minority on the LSU board. But that woman is the daughter of a political supporter in Richard Lipsey. Lipsey Aronson is now on the LSU Board of Supervisors. Richard Lipsey, as we know, has been a big supporter of Will Wade, the embattled basketball coach. And I recall not so long ago, a governor in Alabama, Siegelman, went to jail for putting a political supporter on a board. Why do we have the situation where people who are supportive of particular governors, and this is not only for Edwards, but Jindal and all the others in Louisiana, they end up on these important boards, Dane?
Money influence. It's all it is. It's the moneyed influence in this state. And I, frankly, as much as I've supported Governor Edwards on this show and elsewhere, I can't see how his board appointments are any different than Jindal's board appointments. These are all big donors. These are all big money people, and they don't reflect the state, and they don't reflect any expertise in the area of higher education.
What if we had a law that said if you contributed to a candidate, you could not be on a board? Would that be fair, or would that
be? It'd be a different state is what it would be. And we might as well change the name, because it would be nothing like it is now. And I think that would be one of the greatest things that could ever happen in this state. People need to go on those boards with expertise, not a big fat wallet that they trade with politicians in some cases to get big contracts.
All right. But a listener, and we've got a good audience here, Holly in the Garden District, notes that sometimes people are rewarded not just for monetary contributions. In Rolf McAllister's case, who is editor and publisher of the Business Report, not editor, but publisher. I think he was editor at one point, but Stephanie Regal and J.R. Ball do that job now. But he was twice appointed to the LSU Board of Supervisors by Romer, and also by Jindal, and in his case, it wasn't a monetary contribution as much as it was an influence contribution. He was an influence person, and he was supportive of both governors on the pages of the Baton Rouge Business Report. Is that something that also needs to be looked at?
Again, back to the point, this was not his field of expertise in any way, shape, or form. I can tell you who ought to be on the board at LSU. It'd be Kevin Cope, who's been on your show so many times, one of the country's experts in higher education. But somebody like that doesn't get the time of day. And I'm not even speaking for myself, but they're experts on higher education. And no matter the board, it could be a board overseeing any issue that's important to the state, not higher education. It could be on the pages of the Advocate riverboat pilots. You need to have expertise in that area, on those boards, and you also need diversity. That's the other thing. We're seeing at the Capitol how that those hearings are different. When you have a hearing with women who are interested in those cases come before, and last Friday was one of the most riveting testimonies with Gloria Scott that I have ever listened to and watched at the Capitol, and I've watched a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jeff Sato, do we have a problem with the board selection by governors of Louisiana, no matter who the governor is, or are things okay the way they are?
Well, it'd be difficult to have something any other way. I mean, theoretically, you have the check of the Senate to will vet these people, although it's generally in rubber stamp form. But when we start talking about things like limiting monetary donations or some other kinds of things to keep people or try to steer the board in a certain direction, we start to run up against things like the First Amendment. So I'm not entirely sure about how the system could be any different unless you do something like California used to do, which is to have elections of people to their higher education boards, and they ended up scrapping that. It didn't exactly work out too well.
Now, earlier this week on this program, Denise Marcel, who's part of that legislative panel probing reports of sexual misconduct at LSU, said she thought Ed Orgeron would decline the opportunity to testify before the panel. Should his bosses make it a condition of employment that he testify, Jeff?
Well, gee, I'm not sure if the legislature gives you a lawful order to show up, that you have much of an option not to. But, that aside, I think there needs to be a lot more transparency.
All right, we're going to go to the phone lines after this quick time out of 90 seconds with Dane Sherman and Jeff Satto on Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for the Good Friday version of Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Professors Jeff Satto and Dane Sherman with us, and we'll get their take on a few matters, but we're starting with the LSU debacle, if you will. And now Coach O has been called to testify at a hearing. Legislative panel heard from Gloria Scott last week. Dane Sherman talked about how riveting her testimony was. It was hard not to be affected by her, and she certainly didn't give the indication that she was lying. But as soon as her testimony was completed, an LSU spokesman all but called her a liar. Dane Sherman, should Coach O testify?
Oh, Coach O should be up there it the first thing. But I don't think that their lawyers will ever let him go to the legislature. I'll be shocked. I'd just about bet somebody a sack of boiled crawfish over that. I don't think it's going to happen.
That he won't testify.
I don't believe it. No way in the world. I can't. I think he'll be. Today is Good Friday. It should be today, because if he goes up there, he will be crucified.
Well, if he's telling the truth, what should he be afraid of?
Well, the problem is his testimony is already, he starts knowing nothing about it. Now he just can't remember. It's a laughable. It's a joke. He can't remember. I think he should remember. If he probably had a room full of people when he made that call. And I don't believe for a second that Ms. Scott is telling anything that's not 100% true. I think he willfully doesn't want to remember, because his job is going to be on the line.
877-217-5757 for Dr. Sherman and Satto. And let's go to Dave in South Baton Rouge. Dave, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I took the air out of my balloon. That's exactly what I was going to say. I don't know how Ed Orgeron's going to get out of not testifying, because they're going to subpoena him if he refuses to. And I don't know the optics of having his lawyer step in and basically, try to get him out of testifying, but that's exactly right. I mean, there had to have been multiple people in the room when he made the phone call. And if we remember the timing of when all this happened with Darius Geis, Ed Orgeron was by no means a lock to actually become the permanent coach at LSU. He had to have known, what was going on, and he had to have, tried to, yeah.
At that time, Dave, it had been a year and a few games. He was the permanent coach, but he wanted to win the game. Darius Geis played well against Notre Dame. He scored both of LSU's touchdowns, but LSU still lost the game, 21-17 to the Fighting Irish. He might have, in retrospect, wished he had suspended Darius Geis, but he didn't. And now he's also saying that he had no idea what Geis had said to Gloria Scott, and that seems to also be suspect as far as his knowledge of what happened. But he's dug himself a hole that he will have to either defend his position, or he will either go into the witness protection program, or he will go before the panel and tell his story and hope they believe him. So that's where we are. But Dave, thank you. Appreciate your call. Good to hear from you. Thank you. 877-217-5757. Patrick in Innisfil Estates. Patrick, you're on with Jeff and Dane. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, I was listening to Dane, and I'm looking at the football team and the basketball team, and they don't really use diversity to pick their players. In fact, they're all men. Should we go ahead and get rid of the football team and the basketball team? Because I see no women. There's no diversity that I see when it comes to gender. There's no disabled people on the team. What can we do about that?
Well, that's a somewhat preposterous insight. But, Dane, would you like to respond?
Well, there are plenty of women on the women's basketball team, and there's plenty of men on the men's basketball team. Patrick is wrong. And the other thing that goes to the core of what I've been trying to say, and I've said this for years and years and years, the boards need to have qualified people. And I will assure you that those student-athletes are very much qualified because they meet the criteria to play at the elite level. The problem is the boards never meet the qualification. They know nothing about what they're talking about. In many cases, they're just political appointees, and it's an insult.
Right.
You know, why isn't it's just an insult to have these people on the boards.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. JDT writes, do any of the LSU Board of Supervisors members, including the new employees, have a background in sexual abuse or trauma? So that's a legitimate question, Jeff. I don't know that that's necessarily a prerequisite for being on the board, but it would be helpful at this time, I would think. What do you think?
Well, you know, when we talk about qualifications and all that, you know, it's a useful thing to have people from different life circumstances, backgrounds, occupations, you know, whatever. So, you know, I don't know that we need to have 18 people from higher education sitting on the Board of Supervisors. But, and, you know, diversity we can measure in a lot of different ways, really ideas being the one where we need to have the most, not so much the personal characteristics of those involved. But certainly, you know, I don't, when governors make these appointments, I don't think they go through a list of you know, they have a background, this, that, or the other, and try to fit them to match. So, you know, it might happen by happenstance, mm-hmm. but, you know, that's just not the way the process is right now.
Tom on Bluebonnet Dane says that in the Chronicle of Higher Education, and I did read that story, King Alexander, the erstwhile president of LSU, who just got fired at Oregon State for his actions or inactions at LSU, said that basically the board hired Scott Woodward as AD without consulting him and told him to fire Joe Oliva. It seems that the board has inordinate power at LSU. Now, some might say that's a good thing, but who's running the ship out there?
Well, if you're asking me, it's fairly clear from that article, which I've read, and to note to my readers, I've been reading the Chronicle of Higher Ed since I was on the debate team at Southeastern Louisiana University at 21. It shows the board telling F. King Alexander on this napkin, I hope they do a public records request for that napkin, even the salary they were going to pay Woodward. It was ridiculous. That they should be in accrediting trouble over this, and they may before it's over, because they totally overstepped their boundaries.
Why would that be an accreditation issue?
It would be an accreditation issue because the board does not have the right to hire and fire the minutia of the faculty or the staff. The board hires and fires the in essence the CEO, the executive, the president, the chancellor. But when you start going into the minutia of the institution, then that totally destroys any kind of authority and accountability for that executive mm-hmm. to run the institution. And that's just totally against the standards of accrediting. And they could be in serious Sachs trouble over this if Sachs, you know, gives them the time of day over it.
All right, a question for both of you from Beverly on government, asking whether Coach O can withstand this. Is this a ticking time bomb, or will it go away? Dane, let's start with you.
The drip, drip, drip. I can't remember. The denials do not help him. And if he was listening to, there are probably some great PR people in Baton Rouge that are listening to this show, and I'm sure that they would go to him and say, you guys need to quit hiding this, and and y'all need to get everything out. Because if he doesn't, the cover-up, it becomes a totally different story, and he can't withstand that.
Jeff, is Coach O, is he a dead man walking as far as his viability at LSU, or can he keep going and keep getting his $7 million a year?
No, I don't know. I'll tell you this much. If he had not won a national championship, I think he would be in an untenable position right now. But that one thing is going to give him a lot of cachet, and I don't know. I mean, if he goes and just is completely forthcoming, that forthcomingness may not work in his favor. So we'll just have to see what strategy is taken here.
And another listener notes that there's always a possibility that Coach O is on the level, and that's why he should go before that committee. We'll be back with Dane Sherman and Jeff Satto after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana. Katie Ann McDonald producing, and two of our favorite guests, Jeff Satto on the right in Shreveport at LSU, and Dane Sherman on the left at Hammond at SLU. And they are speaking as individuals, not for their employers. And, of course, in Jeff Satto's case, his employer is the same as Coach O, and we're talking about what's going on with him. Now the embattled coach of LSU, and what a difference 15 months makes. It was on January 13th, actually a little less than 15 months ago, that Coach O was on top of the world with the greatest team in college football history, 15-0, national champs. And then he goes 5-5, and a sexual misconduct investigation that appeared to have him as a peripheral figure now has him front and center. 877-217-5757. We do have some people lined up. We'll get to as many of you as possible, and we do have one line open. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I mean, doesn't common sense dictate that Ogeron didn't care about the woman accuser or even his accused player, only winning a bowl game to advance his own selfish agenda?
All right. Is winning, as Vince Lombardi said, Dane, is winning's not everything, it's the only thing.
I think that's pretty much it. As one of my professors that when I was at the library school at LSU, he said that, you know, we're a great football team with a pretty good university. And it's kind of that order. And that's the way it's looked at. And it's a shame because there's great work being done at LSU on the academic side. There's great research, there's great teaching, they're great students, but we seem to have this inverted, and it was absolutely about winning, and Geis was going to be on that field no matter what.
And as noted on this show not so long ago, King Alexander, in addition to leaving just days before LSU won a national championship in football, he also was here when LSU won a Nobel Prize. And Dr. Satto, we do have this inordinate attention to the football program, and I don't know that that's going to stop, but I bet most of the people in Louisiana don't know that LSU won a Nobel Prize. And in Shreveport, right now, is this news, or is it a lesser story there than it is here? How are people responding to this buzz a few hundred miles north of us?
It's a story here. You see it in the local media. One of the things you have to understand is we don't here in this metropolitan area, we don't have a major college football team. We don't have any college football team. Closest ones are both about 70 miles away. And so there's a lot of attention paid to LSU athletics here. And so, it's still a story. And, again, there's this larger question here is, should we be that caring of athletics and as relates to higher education? That's the reality. That's just the reality.
877-217-5757. David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Dane and Jeff. Hi, David.
Good morning. The Washington Post pointed out that a London School of Economics found that the Trump tax cuts had little or no effect on the economy. 83% went to the top 1%. On the other hand, when President Biden introduces a program that puts money in the pockets of people and guaranteed to create jobs, and by the way, President Obama had a better job record than Trump did.
All right, what's the question?
The Republicans oppose it. But I'll say one thing for the Republicans. They're very good at sending aid to the truly rich and greedy and suppressing the black vote.
All right. Well, how's that for a segue, Jeff Satto? Your buddy David in Atlanta is on the Trump trail. Is it time to give up the ghost and quit focusing on our former president, or is he the gift that keeps on giving?
No, I think it's time. I think it was probably time a couple of months ago. I mean, Trump's not in office. Despite what some people think, he's very unlikely ever to be in office anymore. He'll try and do things behind the scenes. He'll and you know, not behind the scenes for public pronouncements, but he as an issue is no longer an issue.
Well, he could be a kingmaker, and Dane, he has endorsed none other than John Neely Kennedy for re-election next year. Surprise, surprise, as Gomer Pyle would say.
You know, he really is getting those early endorsements out. Like, they're just lining up at Mar-a-Lago. It's amazing. But he still manages to get the headlines, and anybody that's interested in the news knows that he's newsworthy, and so I think we're not going to stop hearing from him for quite a while.
Stella on Nicholson. Stella, you are on Talk Louisiana. Good morning.
Good morning. 30 years ago, my husband was a graduate assistant teaching a lab course at LSU, and he got told by the administration to curve the grades in his classes so that the athletes would get A's and B's, and he tried to refuse to do that. They improved that over the years, that they didn't do it after a while, but that really hurt our feelings when we first came down here that they were doing that.
All right. Yeah, Dane has, and Jeff, both of you, have people ever pressured you to change grades of prominent athletes?
Not me, but I have known of others at various schools who have encountered that, yes.
Dane?
I'm a librarian. I have, over the years, taught our library science course, but where I've worked, I've never seen firsthand anything like that. If it goes on, I have not seen it.
All right. Now, a few weeks ago, actually a little more than a month ago, Dane was Jeff, I think they were on at different times. I know they were, but they had been on together before, but not this particular time. But Professor Satto indicated that he would refrain from receiving the COVID vaccine, and the front page story from Blake Patterson and The Advocate, 40% of Republicans in Louisiana say they won't get the vaccine, and of course that's become a partisan divide on this. And have you changed your mind, Jeff, or are you still sticking to your guns, no vaccine for Dr. Satto?
Yeah, no, because I'm not entirely convinced that I think the process has been a little too rushed, and I still have some questions about side effects and the like. So, those who know me and my situation, I lead a, for various reasons, a pretty hermetically sealed existence. So I'm pretty confident we can keep it out of our household. And so I haven't changed my mind.
Jeff, Dane, what do you think?
I'm going to get my second Moderna as soon as I get off the phone. And I'm thankful for it on this Good Friday that we have scientists that care about us. And I encourage everybody to get their shot. And my whole household will soon be have both shots. And it's just a great thing and a great day. And I encourage our people to get that shot.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Professor Satto and Sherman.
Good morning. Yes, now that Trump got kicked off of Facebook, is there a standard we can establish for blatant liars?
All right. What about the Trump exclusion from social media, Jeff? Is that fair?
I don't know that it's fair in some larger philosophical sense, but that's what Facebook or social media giants want to do. So they have that as private concerns, they have the right to do that.
And the Twitter exclusion has really taken a lot of his power away from him, Dane.
Yeah, and he deserved it. January 6th was one of the worst days in the history of our country, and we're lucky that there was not a slaughter there at the Capitol. And our former president has no right whatsoever to be on these platforms because he has caused damage to living people. We cannot go on with this, and I think the finally, and it was late coming, these technology companies had enough, and they finally put him out, and hopefully he will never come back to those platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've noted that, back to the earlier topic, that Coach O earns more than 50 times more than does the governor of Louisiana on payday. And Gustavo, my friend from Goodwood, says Les Miles walks away with $1.9 million from Kansas. His contract should have been written with a cause clause. What about these guys getting paid multi-millions after being fired for transgressions that you would think they could be fired without any kind of payout at all? Dane, your thoughts?
It's got me scratching my head, I can tell you that. Most people I know have no similar golden parachute, and I will never understand how Les Miles, considering everything he did, walked away with a cash payment from Taft. I don't know how he did it at Kansas. I just don't understand. I guess they figure it's easy to just pay the guy out than to fight him in court later. And maybe that's maybe they just don't want the bad publicity is what it all boils down to. And maybe they need to stand up and say no.
Jeff, your insights on this.
Yeah, well, you know, understand that most of a coach's salary is paid through endorsements, TV, radio shows, boosters, things like that. So, you know, mainly that's the money that's going out the door without those kinds of things. So, you know, if you've got boosters that are willing to tolerate that you know, advertisers and sponsors or whoever else, well, then I guess that's why it happens.
Well, we thank both of you gentlemen for joining us. Hope you have a great Easter and be safe. And let's talk again soon. Thank you, Dr. Dane Sherman. Thank you, Dr. Jeff Saddo.